Accession number 14976, Joseph Weir, reel 3.
Mr. Weir, reel 3. Did you have parachute scares down on the beaches?
Quite often, you know. I don't think I'd ever killed anything. You know, but you used to get called out when those parachutists come, yes.
Mm. You never saw or caught any?
No, I found any.
Could you take me through a typical day on the beach, say from Revali to dusk? Kind of thing that you would, that you personally were doing every day?
Well, you had to do your training. I always remember we had a Sergeant Robinson, and Lance Sergeant Robinson, and he could take the Bren gun to bits, a million pieces, you know, and put it back. He used to train us with the Bren gun, and it sticks in my mind because he was that good with it, how he could take it all to bits and put it back, you know, and. I mean, he'd only been a territorial man. He wasn't a regular soldier, he was a territorial, but he was great. And I couldn't say whether we did anything more than that, but you know, doing your spot on the in the beach.
What time was Revali?
At dawn. We had to stand two in the mornings, you know, but to stand two at dawn. All they had to be, and was the Cheshire Regiment that were behind us in the fields above us, you know, and because they had been told if anybody moves on, they shoot them.
So you had a duty of being on the beach in a guard situation, protection situation, mm-hmm. And if you weren't doing that, you were training.
You were training, yes.
And you mentioned route marches. Mm-hmm. What other kind of training were you doing down there when you did get the opportunity?
Well, as I said before, I think it was just weaponry, you know, your weapons.
Mm-hmm. Weapons and equipment would be in short supply, were they not, after the,
yes,
the loss in Dunkirk? Was new stuff coming through to you?
Well, we had ours, but the lads from Dunkirk, there was time, and they... Those things used to come then, it was always Dunkirk lads first. they got the materials. Argyll, Sunderland second. Dunham last, you know, because the Argylls had to get rid of their Scottish stuff, you know. And but it was always that. I remember this quartermaster, he was called because he went like that. something like that. But it was always Dunkirk first, then Argyll's, then the Durhams. And that was clothing and equipment.
Mm-hmm. Did you get much opportunity for leisure on the beach?
No.
For leisure time?
No, well, as I say, when we first went on, they were getting saddlers at Bridport. Then all leave was stopped and all deer passes were stopped. So you were just on the beach. You know, and I used to think it was great when I was walking along to put these split pins in. Just doing the automatic. Then you realise, I think Roy Hall, the sergeant, I think he was with us at the time. There was a sergeant, I'm sure it was Roy Hall, but just used to, where the minefield had been opened and closed for the day.
Had you placed the mines, the battalion? Had the battalion
placed mines? I hadn't placed them, but the battalion must have done, you know. Or the engine, it might have been a corps of engineers, you know, they might have. But it was just a split pin to put in and take out.
Was it marked in some way so people didn't wander into it?
Couldn't tell you. It possibly was, but I couldn't tell you. Because the beach was close to civilians then, of course, you know.
And you said the civilians were a little bit...
huffy at first. But, I mean, they got used to it. And then they thought, well, them lads, they're looking after us. Mm-hmm.
So they warmed to you?
Mm, they did, yes. I've never heard that place name since West Bexington, till just about a fortnight since there was somebody had an accident there. I said, oh, it's still, because I suppose a whole area be built on now, because that was a lonely part. Of course, the division was right along that coastline. You probably knew all the way along that coast.
Mm-hmm. You were just a rifleman in the section at this time.
Yes. Well, let's say I went to the hospital, and when I was in hospital fortnight or 3 weeks, then the battalion were off the beach, moved into Devon, and into Clumpton, and that's where they rejoined the battalion in Clumpton. And I was in the scout's hut again, on the floor, and that's where we did a lot of route marches and up at Exmoor, and you know, 2 or 3 days up on the moors. That was hard work. The second time I went up, I was very lucky. I got captured, so I was taken down to the village up the road, and when I got back to the unit the next day, the captain room, he says, where were you last night? I says, sitting in the pub. He says, how? I says, I was taken prisoner. And they had spent the night on the moors. It was cold up there. By God, it was an awful place up there, moors. And that's where we would start firing that boy's anti-tank rifle, firing the cardboard things that went up there and firing up. And that was when I was telling you the passes had been stopped at Bridport. Well, they started again. Then when we were at Killington, there was deer passes to Exeter. And how they were issuing them was battalion cross-country run on Thursday morning. And the first 20 men got a pass. Well, that's the first 20 men, it was the same people week after week, you know. And that was great. I mean, have you met Sergeant Barnes? Him and I, well, he was my corporal at that time. And he used to say, I'm going to keep with you. But he was a great lad, a great friend of mine. We had something in common later on in life.
Did the people in Clumpton and the area, were they a bit more friendly? Than
they soon got friendly. The first thing, there was a truckage there, and you know, might see them, but that was the first time in my life I had a poor dig. Never had a poor dig till I remember that was in truckage there, and we used to go to the hymn singing on the Saturday night in the picture hall, a Sunday night in the picture hall, you know, and all our lads were there, because I mean, you had your, You didn't have a lot of money to drink, but we used to drink the cider. It was only fourpence a pint. But it was from there that I was sent to Upcombe for the signals, the first start of the signal course.
You basically were told that there were quite big manoeuvres up on the
moors. Yes, there was a lot of, yes.
You've mentioned one or two. Do you remember any particular one that was?
Well, I remember one had been. And up there one day, and we come from the moors, we're marching back, and we used to have to go on a march and stay in this village for night and march on fairly, and we're going along, and it was a red hot day, and this officer, Captain Room, he says, everybody was thirsty, and he says to me, fall out as soon as you can and get a shop and get a bottle of lemonade. And of course I got caught with the lemonade. So I had to go in front of Captain Rowe on a charge and was him that sent us. He says, I've got to give you some. I did a few days jankers for that, but that was, you know, because the umpires says, you're supposed to be paying for the desert, you can't go for lemonade in the desert. So when they've come in, a bunch of us, and we start this signal course, and it seemed, you know, well, it never gets all this, the Morse code and things like that, you know, and So the 18 whalers, there wasn't much attached to the, you know, to it once you got no other signals and things like that. But well, the course started then, it didn't finish till I went to Cyprus.
So what were they teaching you? You've mentioned Morse code.
Mm-hmm.
Had you to reach a certain standard of reading it?
You had to, yes. I didn't reach it at Ofcom because we had, as I say, it carried on. Because it carried on the ship going out, at least we did the, and it was Cyprus before the results come through, so that was, you know, that's like further on.
So there was Morse code, the 18 wireless, did you say?
The 18 wireless sets, yes. And the flags, of course, you had to, you know, waving the flags about.
18 wireless, what did it look like?
Well, it's the pack on the back, you know, the, they're more modern now, you know, it was foot and a half to a foot, and it's on your back. You know.
Was it heavy?
Not heavy. Because there was really nothing inside it. You know, it was...
How did it work?
Batteries. It was batteries. And you had the batteries, and you also had a... Your number two had a static battery. If you're static anywhere, you could use that. But there was one for, you know... And I was very lucky. Wireless, but then again, I was the junior, you know, and the those lads had been attached to companies. As soon as you go into any battle, they wanted to go back to their old companies, and it was 2 years after before I got to a company of my own.
So you had wireless flags.
I used to do semaphore.
And again, did you have to do that up to a certain standard?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was there any other means of communication that you were trained to?
Well, you had the lamp, you know, which was the same thing, you know, was the lamp. And no, that was it, I think. Mm-hmm. That's the big flags and the lamps and that. So, the same went to end from Upcombe. Then my leave come around. First actual leave I'd had. So I was sent to him for 7 days.
When was this?
This must have been of January. January 41. No, January 41, something like that. It was the first leave I had, because all leave had stopped. And of course, when it starts again, the W was at the bottom of the list. And now I went out, and maybe it's been a bit later, but anyway, I went on the leave, and I was home. And on the way back, got stopped. We had to report the RTU at York. And it was any 50 day members had to get off the train. We all got off the train and were given a pass. We got another fortnight pass, demob leave, embarkation leave. So it must have been a little bit later, but it was embarkation. So I went back for another one, because when I went home, my mother said, "What are you doing?" "Oh, yeah, such it." Tell the teller, you know, and because, well, home again. And
when your mother knew it was embarkation leave, what was her feelings there?
Well, she says, "You don't know where we're going," and she says, "Well, just do what you've got to do." Mm-hmm. And she just took it out, and she stuck it over. But as I said, that was when I went home on that leave, you know, that where she was fully expecting to polish me brasses, and I go home with black buttons. she was rather annoyed. Couldn't get over it.
In effect, you had a 3 week leave.
3 week leave, yes. Then went back, there was still a bit more training. And we hadn't to tell anybody where we're going, you know. So we didn't know ourselves, really. And yet, we're walking up and down the street in the KD for the Middle East with what they call a trophy on the back. And
so everyone would know where you're going.
Unless we're a decoy.
How did you feel about the prospects of going abroad?
Well, it was something, you know, that we would have to come and I think we're all looking forward to it, you know. Because as I say, Whitley Bay had been the furthest I've been away in my life. I mean, even down Dorset and where that, you know, you never and all our lads were the same. I mean, we used to be shilling on the train to Whitley Bay on a Sunday afternoon, and that was everybody's enjoyment.
And whilst this was going on, you were still doing your signal training.
Oh, yes.
I meant to ask you, and I should have done, did you do any training with the telephone and lines?
Oh, well, you had to practice laying lines, and you had telephone, you'd be able to take a telephone anywhere, and you had to be able to make the joint, proper joint, with the cutter, and, but I'm, well, that was all part of the training, yes.
Mm. How do you lay a line? What is the system of laying a line?
Well,
the cord presumably be on it, or the cable will be on it.
It's a rule. You see, then you you've got, well, if sometimes it's 2 or 3 years, and you run it off, and you've got to put it in decent places, and you know. When you're down there, I remember you had to get it high over railway lines and things like that, you know. And
how was that done, to get over a railway line or a road or something like that?
Well, you just had to use what was there. I don't know if I had saved it or not, but I know, I think, because we skipped them later on, I know, we just had to use knock a nail in and tie it, keep it up that way. But that all come into the training, yes. I'm sorry, but I forgot that before, but that was all part of the training.
The telephone, what kind of an instrument? Was it the usual kind of domestic telephone?
Well, it was a hand telephone in a box, and you could carry it over, you could sling it over. It was a little green, well, the dark green out there. I would say about 9 inches, 4 inches, and you carried it around with you.
How efficient were the various means of communication that you're trained to?
Well, I found them quite good. Yes, I found them quite good. Except the flags, you know, that was dangerous. Dangerous. I've got an article, I'll tell you later on. the flag, I think that was, you know, I mean, that was World War, wasn't it? Further on than that, like, but,
Did you have to do this training with your communication signals rather than drill training?
Yes. You were there in that course, and then, as I say, we come back. I went to the course, and I did so much enough come. Then I came back to the company, and I remember the first night I got back, you haven't done guard for 3 months. Get straight on guard. That was the welcome you get.
So, can you take me through preparing for guard and doing it? What was the process of preparing yourself for guard?
Well, it was. The biggest thing was spitting polish in your shoes and your bayonet scabbard, you know. They had to be shining, and the bottom of the bayonet scabbard, the metal had to be clean as could be. And everything, you know, you put an extra press into your trousers, you something, put soap in the crease.
Did you have access to an iron, to iron the creases?
Well, we always managed to have an iron, I don't know where they came from, but there was always an iron there, you know. Because you just had to do it on the floor, because it was the used to heat the iron on the stove, you know, heat the iron on the stove, and mind, everybody used to help. If you're going in guard, you got help of anybody. In fact, regular sergeants, his shoes were always immaculate, his, you know, training, and he would loan you his boots for 2 bob. Because, you know, if you were the smartest on turnout, you didn't have to do guard. You did the company office runner.
Stickman.
The stickman. You got to bed at night.
And this was some form of glory to your little unit, was it?
Oh, yes. And I went out one day, and I was echelon, and I thought, oh, I'll get the stick for the air. Everything was perfect. And I went around, and yes, somebody else got the job, and I thought, oh. And of course, it's hard to make it come along. He says, you know why, did you didn't get out, did you? Yeah. He says, what's that sticking out your first aid pocket? You know, where the first aid pouch was down there. Your watch was stuck in there, and the flap was, the watch was unsure. That was it. So that was it.
What were you guarding?
Just a company office. I mean, and there was our company office in the garden. Then 200 yards up the street, there was B company, and there was C companies. Another 200 yards, there was D companies. There were the three companies that was in Killington. And we used to have to watch for the order officer coming from, and then you'd call the guard out for them. If the other same come, he'd come to see, and he would ask, he would tell you if you wanted the guard out.
The guard, was it inspected by the orderly officer?
The orderly officer, yes.
How many would be on a guard?
Well, that's four shifts, isn't it? Four shifts and two shifts, so it'd be eight. So there must be nine you went on parade.
So what time did you start your guard?
At 6 o'clock, I think. Six or six.
In the morning, was this?
6 at night till 6 in the morning.
And you did, what did you say, four shifts? Is that
two on, two off, sort of thing.
Next day, you would be tired. Did you have time off at all?
No, yet. No, that was it. You know, you were back on you're back on parade, whatever they were doing.
Can we look at the signalling again? What is the size? How many men are there in the signal section?
Well, I don't wouldn't like to see it, because you see, you've got A, B, C, D, H, Q, and support. They used to have the wireless, and there was two men attached to each company. So then there's a, but it must have been about 30 in the platoon altogether, you know, because you got two with each of those companies and support company, and you've got sergeants and two corporals at least at the back to be at HQ. They were in charge of the headquarters, and it was always about four or five in case any of the lines went this, you know, and you had to go out and mend the lines. Now I think it was just a case of, and I mean, as I say, the only way you could get promotion in the signals is if one of the ones that was back in the headquarters got shot. You know, because we only allowed so many NCOs, and the ones that was the head ones was the sergeant and corporals, they were the headquarters. Well, and there was the lance corporal in charge of each company, of course, you know.
So when you were trained signaller, you were part of the headquarter company?
You were attached to the headquarter company then. But then you were detached to the company. When you were out of battle, when you were away from the line, you went back to your headquarters. I mean, because Nazi, it was a brush up. You had to do a little bit extra training to refresh your mind. Then when any battle started, you went for. And I mean, as I said earlier, these lads, they've been through different things, but they wanted to go back to their own companies if any actions were seen, you know.
And in the battle situation, you were detailed out to various companies, and
well, yeah, you see, you went automatically to the company that you had been brought up to, now that got used to.
So the signal section was really a number of men from each company,
yeah,
who went back to the companies in action. Who was your first commanding officer, signal section?
The first command officer signal section, it was a little fella. Just a little fella, no, he was. No, I kind of can't remember. The second one, Captain Wedgwood. Well, you know what family he comes from.
Do you remember any of the NCOs that were in your early section?
Well, when I first went on the course, when I first went to Ufcom, one of the men, yes, that's where I was from, Bladen, and he had married a Bladen girl. And I knew the girl he married, you know. And he took me on his wing straight away. He was a regular soldier, you know. He says, I'll get you through this course, you know. It was like that. And him and I have been friends ever since.
And who was that?
Sergeant Freddie Scott. Regular soldier. He was a great lad. He was a sergeant sometimes. He was a private another time, but he was a sergeant another time. And he finished out of the signals altogether, and he finished up in the in Bren Gun carriers. I've seen him regular until last year. Well, I wasn't at the reunion last year, but I hear tell he wasn't either. But the year before, he was very poor. His wife said it would be there because he lived. I think it's Nottingham he lived. He'd been working in the mines down there. But he was a great friend all the time. Well, I met him two or three times after that.
Do you remember any other NCOs in the early days?
Well, a man I would like to meet was a Corporal Sixsmith, just from Washington. I met him once just after the war. I was sitting outside Phoenix waiting for his wife coming out the shop, and I've never seen him since. And tried to contact him and never have. The Corporal Teague that came, I think it was from the Essex Regiment that came from, and he was a great lad. Great lad. Brilliant on the wireless, you know. And of course, as the lad is friendly with me, he'd be in the, you know, Ron, he was the DR, you know, and he just came to me about 15 years ago, rang us up from the town. Is that Corporal Weir? I said, well, it was. He says, I'm Curly Brown, and he says, can I call and see you? And him and his wife out working around and living in North Allerton, and from then on, being great friends. I've had a fortnight's holiday to be in this year, and that started my recuperation from the illness.
Amongst your comrades, the privates or the ranks, do you recall any of those that started with you in the signals?
They started with me in the signals. I can't remember, because the Battle of Marath, we lost nearly all our signals. We lost all the forward company signals. Whether they were killed or captured, but they didn't come back.
So it was a close and knit little group.
Oh yes, yes. And we always had a good football team. And we always liked to play the bugle section, you know, Ginger Avery and Company. And when the signals played the Akak section, it was a battle royal. Always was. Even in Iraq, and they were playing on a great big hill, it was still played for sure. It's cut the pound or something, which was a lot of money.
What was the first indication that the time has arrived, we are moving abroad?
When
you came back from your leave and then you were going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. And funny enough, there again, I went and there was a regular soldier showing me how to put his nut on. And he's a Corporal Harden from Bladen. And he married a girl out of our street, and I just knew him by sight. He says, "What funny world this is, you know, how you meet people like that."
Do you remember setting off from Clampton on your journey?
Yes.
What date would this be?
It was early May. Now, I remember I dropped a postcard on Carlisle Station to my mother saying, get in touch with you as soon as possible, or something like that. But when I got the card, somebody picked it up and posted it. And because then we went up to, and the film The Bismarck was shown the other night. Did you watch it at all? And the one about they had to bring their support away from a convoy, and it was our convoy, because when we got on the ships and we got away.
Where did you sail from?
Gourock.
And do you recall the ship you were on?
Duchess of Richmond.
What was she like?
Well, to us, it was fantastic. Except when you had to sleep downstairs. Because you've got 1,000 men sleeping in hammocks. And it was glorious weather during the day. I mean, it was, remember, 10 weeks that you should take to get out there then. And you were sunbathing. Of course, there again, it was on the signal course again. It spoiled my fun, actually, but we got on the signal course again. And we used to work the light from ship to ship. The 9th Battalion was on another ship on the Duchess of Richmond, and we were down in this hole. And I remember when we first went down, it was great big. We had cheese the first day we joined the army. It was a great big bin of boiled eggs, and you could eat as many as you like. It was a strange stuff. But anyhow, I wasn't sick. I was one of the few that wasn't sick.
Did you eat on the same deck that you slept on?
I think so, yes. As you say, the...
How did you take to the hammock?
Actually, the hammock was all right, actually. But when we got later on, so many could go on deck at night, which was a pleasure. Till you went back downstairs that morning, and you smelt that was absolutely terrible. And of course, the officers and that, they weren't, because they were in the top. I mean, they had ice water and everything at the tables, and we couldn't get... we couldn't get a decent glass of water.